Good morning and welcome to Brass Tack Sunday. I'm your host and moderator. We go until quarter after one this afternoon. I'm Corey Lane, and in the chair, our technical producer, technical operator and producer is none other than Mr. Dennis Johnson. And this program is brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. Now, at Williams Industries, there's various things, various services that you can engage to support a program like this, a project called Brass Tack Sunday. So during the week, we give you the opportunity, the facility through our call-in programs where we let all opinions contend, sprinkle with some facts, of course. And on Sunday, we seek to go to the head of the stream, the drivers behind the wheel, the persons, the experts, the specialists, to bring the facts, to bring the information to you. That is the project called Brass Tack Sunday. And today is no different. Today, we're looking at what does the IMF program mean for Barbados? The pros, the cons, all about the IMF. So I want to start today's program as we wait to be joined by our guest in explaining to you Barbadians who are interested, and we want to make sure that we, as usual, capture the greatest cross-section, the widest cross-section of Barbadians listening to ensure that they understand what the IMF is all about. Now, the IMF has been known in Barbados to be the boogeyman, so to speak, for many, many years. Only recently, under what has been described as the new IMF, especially looking at our neighbors to the, that would be the west, and to the north, in Grenada and Jamaica, respectively, we see progress, we see growth, and we definitely see an image of a new IMF. We did a program some months ago about what this whole IMF is about, but there's nothing wrong with a little repetition for learning. And the International Monetary Fund is an organization of 189 countries working to foster global monetary cooperation. Now, what does that mean? It speaks to the fact that there are countries all over the world trading globally, and what they are trying to do is to maintain stability in the international monetary system so that we can have our pegs, and that our pegs are really worth what we are saying that they are worth. The IMF is there to look at surveillance, so they monitor what's happening in their member countries. Barbados, we are signatory to the IMF, so we are a member of the IMF. They deal with lending, and that lending is there to ensure that they can provide loans to countries that have potential balance of payment problems. They deal with capacity development. And the Barbados have been in somewhat a capacity development program with the IMF for some time because they were advising us on our tax reform and our tax improvement. So they were here, and when you saw things in relation to the BRA, BRA, and so on, they were advising here about that tax reform and strengthening our tax collection. So that is in relation to the IMF. I want to talk specifically now about the IMF and Barbados. Now, if you look at the last Article 4 consultation with Barbados and a report coming out of the last IMF team visit, I believe it's June 5th to June 7th, there are a number of things that were said, but these are the ones to kind of summarize it for those of you who don't like a lot of rhetoric and a lot of fluff. They say we have to look at addressing expenditure. What that means is cut spending. You're spending on subsidizing bus fares, you're spending on education, free health, and so on. They say that the taxes are very high and the revenue is high when you look at a country like Barbados. So Barbados is taking in lots of money. It's just that it is spending lots of money. So they're saying you need to cut some spending. Now, they talk about efficiency and effective public service. Now, some people believe that efficiency and effective is the same word. It's a little different. Effective means getting people to do what they're supposed to do. Efficiency means doing it the most economical way, which means cut wages or send home people. It's just a fancy word, efficiency in the public service. Containing wages. Now, we know about that all too well because our wages have been contained for some time. Although there's discussions now about a 4.5% increase over 3 years. Reform pensions. suggestion of how do you reform these pensions? Do you lower them or do you actually engage in issuing pension in government paper, the reforming of pensions? Oh, the troublesome SOEs, state operated entities? No, state owned entities, enterprises. So the statutory corporations, fancy name again. User fees. So when you go to the hospital, instead of just going and showing your ID card and getting service for free, getting your checks and getting your bandages and so on, there will be a price tier for everything. So a bandage may be $2, a cast may be $200, etc., etc. User fees instead of free healthcare at point of delivery. Of course, they're talking about privatization. We know what that means. Mergers, stronger oversight. They talk about broadening the tax base, and this is something that the last Minister of Finance sought to do when they wanted to bring all of the street vendors, everybody under the net to pay some form of tax. The NSR is another way of broadening the tax because there are people who can escape paying taxes if they know what it is they're doing. And continuing with strong tax administration. And we spoke about that at the beginning of the program where the IMF would have helped us in collecting taxes by making sure that the BRA was established and functioning properly. The ease of doing business to improve and attract investment. In other words, that is a non-austerity way of dealing with improving Barbados' economic position. How will that happen? It happens basically by making Barbados more attractive to investors, getting investors to come here, getting money to be in the economy. At present, it is very difficult to do certain types of businesses in Barbados. Registration takes very long. Something if you want to register a vehicle, it can take very long. When you have cases that are not straightforward, sometimes our systems do not allow for our people to use their brains and make things happen. They say, you know, this is not the way it is done, and sometimes something that should take 3 hours takes 9 months. And developing the private sector. Some people may say developing a private sector, but I will not go there so early in the morning. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're actually going to start with your calls because we don't have our guest in studio who will be talking to us about the IMF. So we're going to engage with you, and you know how to engage with us. You give us a call at 434-1790. This is Brass Stacks Sunday in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joins from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christ Church 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Brass Stack Sunday, 10 minutes after 11 o'clock. We've got the lines open. Let's say good morning and welcome to the first caller. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Corey.
Hi, good morning.
I'm on, but not to discuss nothing, because I'll be back in September.
Well, yeah, remember you gave 100 days.
I would like Brass Stack this morning to give us a little cricket course.
Okay.
Yeah, so you'd be kind to do that?
I'd be kind to do that. What I'm going to do, I'm going to ask the producer to link me up with what's happening and give us some scores. We'll be giving you scores periodically throughout the program. I think it's West Indies versus Sri Lanka.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, no problem.
Thanks a lot.
Not a problem. Okay. Brass Stacks, good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, Corey, how you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Okay, I'm good. There was something which you just said, which I have to pick up on, which is in terms of whether you have the only two options being cut wages or send home people.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when you said that just now.
I didn't say it like that, but go ahead.
I know you said, but you said those are the
I interpreting the words that I see here that be fancy to fool people. That's right. What I did, right? But you give your own interpretation.
Okay, I agree. Mm-hmm. But that is one of the things that I think people, that is an idea I think which people have to get around from, because I think that is one that brings people most fear.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief is that you don't have to do either of those things to that degree. What you have to do, the addition, is to get the public sector to provide more services. In short, do more with what you have. And so there has to be imagination in the public service,
mm-hmm.
in a restructuring of the public service, in order to say, okay, how many things can we do in this country that can then the public service can do more in order to maintain the levels of employment that they have and justify the wages that they are getting.
But you agree with the notion that every action has an opposite and equal reaction?
Yes.
Okay, so when you get the public private sector to do more, what happens so to those
sector,
in the...
When the public service, not private sector, I'm talking about. I want everybody to do more, yes, but I want the public service to do more. Because we have a problem right now in that there's a lot of employment, a lot of our money that's paid out goes to support the amount of people that is in the public service.
Good, and the number of people there. Okay, let's look at a corporation like CBC. Which I have seen reports that says CBC can be, and again, use back these words, efficient with about 65 people and has about 300 people. What do you get the other 240? And let's be generous. What do you do with the other 100? What can they do more to be productive, to earn their keep, so to speak? So let's break down this thing to the nitty-gritty of it. Let's get to the core.
Well, the first thing, my response to that would be, not everybody has to stay at the CBC. Because when I speak about the public service is a whole bunch of different things. So therefore, moving people within the public service from areas that they're not necessarily, that they have not necessarily to stay in, to others where they require effort, where they require people, is a different thing. But you have to come up with the imagination, the creative jobs or whatever, that you're now going to get them to do in these new areas. And then the ease in terms of retraining them and that sort of stuff. But that then is a reimagining of the whole public service. So when we take out little sections of it, let's say like CBC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have said already, we're trying to run an analog country and a digital world. And the CBC, the way in which this broadcast stuff is going on, that used to be relevant 20 years ago or whatever, is no longer relevant. We have the internet. The internet is now the backbone of communication. And we have to figure out how can we develop that there now to provide the services that the broadcast system used to do so many years ago. So therefore now we have to retrain some of the individuals within the CBC, or at least give the CBC new focus and new direction and new initiatives in terms of, okay, how can I use the internet in order to communicate to Barbados, the world, whatever, and then provide services on that, along that, those lines.
I want to state that I agree with you in principle, and I move to the next tier, which is how and can we do this? Now,
trying to answer that question as to how and can we has to start first with, we have to have the conversations. We have to put together, Ms. Motley has already indicated that she is going to put together various teams to look at mission critical issues and what have you. But I also believe that she has to put together spaces where people can then come and discuss those things that are relevant. So in short, if you want to discuss what's going on at CBC, it's not just a discussion that happens in Parliament or should happen behind Cabinet. It should happen also with the members of CBC, and also with the general public. So how can you reimagine the various departments of the public service, right? And then how can you reimagine the services that are provided, and then break them up into the various teams that are required in order to become profitable? expecting the private sector to absorb the amount of people who would be sent home from the public sector is unreasonable. It is not going to happen. Because one of the problems is that we don't have the population that requires the private sector to need so many more people in order to achieve the things that they do. So they are interested in profitability and efficiency. So the first thing that they're going to do is look at the teams that in the private sector. They look at the teams that they have and say, well, okay, do I really need one or two more people or whatever? Far less from taking on 20 or 30. No, that's not going to happen.
I like the direction that you're going in. There's one area, and I'm glad you call early and you call when it's like the calls are now coming in, but I want you to stay with us. I want to engage you, and possibly you can help engage some others. So we create a kind of like a online, using the internet, a panel discussion that we're here, right? We started to do as you recommend. I want to go back though and be a bit controversial once again with this whole idea of conversation and discussion. And the last time I had this discussion with he's now the Minister of Agriculture, I think it came across wrong that I am anti-discussion, anti-conversation. And that is not it. I think that is necessary. And far be it just from being necessary, I think that has what been pointed to as the ingredient for success both in Grenada and in Jamaica. Now, I want to state my difficulty with it, though. And my difficulty with it is that I believe that we stop at discussion and conversation too often. So we discuss and we converse and we converse and we discuss. The most we may do is put it in a recommendation. It goes in a report and we know about the file 13 and how full it is at this stage. We know that. My thing about in this new dispensation, I think I have seen Barbadians start to do it already. There's this new thinking and this new breath of fresh air and so on in terms of the creative industries. And I think that when I ask you the question about the 100 people at CBC, they can be engaged through the Ministry of the Creative Industry and Culture and so on in terms of showcasing our young people. And the question before used to be about Barbados as too small a market. But you hit the nail on the head when you talk about the internet. So Barbados is no longer the market. We have the YouTubes and we have so on that we can actually showcase our talent and sell it to the world. What say you?
I agree with you. The internet is, in my opinion, one of the most important things that has happened to Barbados. Because the market no longer is just local. The market, or not even regional, it is now international. And the requirements of the opportunities that exist outside of Barbados for people with expertise are vast. But the challenges you have to look for those opportunities, and then you have to realize how do you exploit those opportunities. We have a very relatively highly educated population. And beyond that, there we have a population that can be trained quickly and easily, because they have a basic education, in order to figure out how to do certain things or whatever. So therefore, we now have to shift the idea that we only need to provide services in Barbados, and now we have to look at the wider international aspect. And that is where government now has to play a major role.
Let me jump in here. Let me jump in here for two reasons. One, I want to say that Sri Lanka is 195 for five with 258, 258 to win. For those of you following the cricket match, West Indies versus Sri Lanka, they are batting along. Now, the other part I want to hit you with the bombshell. I like to be the optimist. I like to be the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in the room. But let me be the pessimist now here. What you are talking about, we have new leadership. But leadership are not the type of people who actually get on the ground and get it done. And sometimes this is where the blockage comes. We have permanent secretaries who've just been shuffled around. We have Senator Lucine Moore, I believe she's the Minister of Telecommunication, responsible for the Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation. I'm using that as an example. But forget that. Let's look at the people that we have in place. The people existing at CBC. Do we have the capacity there to bring about what is needed, what you're talking about? This newness, this freshness, this innovation. Do we have that? Is it possible? Let's be real.
I believe we we have that capacity in Barbados, right? Like, once again, I am not limiting myself to when I discuss the expansion of particular operations or whatever, to only the people who are currently functioning within that operation.
But you know our system. Do you know our system? The people that are there, they are the people in charge. They're the person with the flashlight and the keys. And we know how they behave. So we may have the capacity, but if the capacity is outside of the organizations that we are thinking about, is it any use? Can it still work?
No, but not all the capacity, not all the capacity, Corey. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is that there are people at CBC who I'm quite confident are capable of the change, who might probably want the change. I don't know. I've never worked.
No, I don't want to have. I don't want to have these pie in the sky type of conversation. I want to be real with you. I remember CBC when the Cubans came in and they were looking at the backdrop thing and they spent a lot of money. Yes, Dennis Nodding here. He was there too. He know what we're talking about, right? Uh-huh. If the capacity was there all the time and it never happened, what makes it happen? No. I was saying that you to talk about leadership. Good leadership actually inspires people, even if before they were willing or unable, that they are now willing and able to make these things happen.
Corey, leadership is definitely part of it as well, which is why I'm saying I have confidence in Lucille to be able to do those things. But again, people are all human, and somebody, she mightn't necessarily be thinking or focusing on that particular idea. She might have gotten instructions and said, well, listen, either cut wages or send home people. And then she's thinking of those lines. But somebody now has to come and tell her, well, listen, no, you don't necessarily have to. Let's look at this other option. Okay, and as I said, the people at CBC that can do the things that have to be done. But I don't know to what degree a lot of them were probably stopped from doing the things that were done. I don't know to what degree in each public service, in all of the public service, I have heard reports of people who would go into public service with the best intention of working, right? But either not knowing what they have to do, or not, or being told, well, listen, you're working too hard. You're showing me up. We can't do this there. Okay? Or the idea people being resistant. So the obstacles, understanding the obstacles and the individuals who are blocking progress and removing those obstacles, that the most important thing.
We have not been able to get around that for the last 30 or 50 years. How do we get around it now?
Pray to God, that's all I can say.
All right, Carla, hold on. Let's bring in another call. I got to hold on you for a little while. Good morning. Welcome to Brass Tax Sunday. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I am fine, thanks. Praising the Lord.
Okay. You said something about just now about cutting, sending home people, and whatever. Don't really think that some of these people want sending home call to get them paid and they ain't doing nothing?
All right, I can let the caller answer that one. Caller, you heard the question?
Yes.
Well, go ahead. The floor is yours.
So some I think people, that...
Don't hold on, caller number two. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, some people do need sending home. Okay? But notice the word and the operative word, some. Not everybody or not massive amounts of people. And we have to think in terms of what happens when you send home all these people. What effect do you have on the society? What effect do you have on the economy? We have to understand that some of these people are supporting larger groups of people. So when you send home those particular people, what effect does that have then on somebody who depends on some money that's coming from those people to go to school or whatever?
Wait, this WhatsApp is very, very appropriate right after that sentence. And it goes, good morning. The civil service is too top-heavy. Every time services are cut, maids and general workers are the ones who go home. There are too many permanent secretaries and deputy permanent secretaries and persons at the level with duplicate portfolios, and their salaries are huge. What I would do is to make the age of retirement 60, effective January 1st next year, allowing for all paperwork to be filed one time. Therefore, persons are going home with their gratuity and pension, not unemployed. From there, you restructure the civil service and filled only necessary posts.
But here again, just having a carte blanche answer like that there to the solution is wrong, because we are then talking about sending home expertise. We are talking about sending home people who have experience and who know the ins and outs of various things.
And then so bring them back and pay them double as consultants.
Right, exactly. Exactly. No.
But if I may get in here.
All right, go ahead.
Yes, go ahead.
If you got people that's supposed to be expert, right? Or whatever word you just call, they're getting a big salary. Mm-hmm. They're not doing anything. They're telling you, oh, like, I have to wait to this body. I have to write a letter to this body. There's nothing that can do because that's the law. I would have to wait to this body send me back some information. And they're sitting down 12 years, 5 years, and they're sitting down waiting for an answer from the big boy up there. Because he can't do nothing until he get back a letter. And I'm talking from experience, as Corey would know.
Mm-hmm. I do this know. I can verify 12, what you're talking about.
12 years. Mm-hmm. That you are waiting for somebody. The ombudsman, that office won't shut in. When you go across, where this go, where go, like, if you buy anything.
You mean public council and
public
all of those.
Public council.
But before you go any further, let me reengage you with the caller's comment. He is saying, instead of shutting down these places and sending home these people, how about getting them to work more and be more efficient? That is what he's saying.
They're going to work when you get a big salary?
Hold on. No, Corey, let me get in here, okay? Mm-hmm. Corey.
My look in this discussion, son. It's good guessing. Go ahead.
This is the exact thing which I'm talking about in terms of people being obstacles. Mm-hmm. And you have to know which obstacles need to be removed, mm-hmm. okay? Because they are not doing the work. When you have a person in a high place, making a high salary, he should be doing a lot of work mm-hmm. in order to...
Should be.
Right, that is the point.
Should be.
But this is what I'm trying to say, right? He should be, let's put it, compelled to do the work that has to be done.
But he might tell you that his hand is tight. He have to wait from a letter from Corey. He got to wait till Corey get back to him. I send off a letter, so I got to wait till Corey get back to him. So
this
if
is
Corey
where
don't get back to me, I can't do anything.
Callers, this is where I believe that leadership, management in relation to ministers, and in this case, particularly the prime minister, and I'll tell you why. I believe that all that y'all are saying is correct, but what happens is the accountability and the responsibility to whom and to who. Because at the end of the day, we have a lot of people, like the lady's talking about, she would write her complaints and she would go to the ombudsman, she would go through the system and she would get no reply. Who are these people accountable to, or get victimized? Who are these people accountable to? And I am saying that at the level of permanent secretary, what has to happen is when these people fail to do what they're supposed to do, as opposed to thinking that their position is concrete and the governor general appoint them to the Gazette and they cannot be moved, that they go through the proper employment rights regulation by giving a warning and another warning and a send packing with the same Gazette from the governor general. But we don't do that. We believe that a government job is a job for life. And
yeah,
if the permanent secretaries fail to do that,
can't do nothing.
Correct. And if the permanent secretaries fail to do that, then the minister intervenes. And if the minister fails to do that, then the prime minister intervenes. And then I believe that within 6 months that you would have a public service that understands that they are accountable. Now, yes. let me just read this thing first before I let you all guys continue, because I am putting this conversation now in a different context and it still relates to the IMF. Now, when they were doing the interview with, I think it's Nicole Lamframbrons from the IMF, she was the chief of mission in Grenada. She said Grenada's progress under the IMF program has been impressive. They had like 4% growth here, 3.9% recently, particularly compared to its previous fund-supported program. What do you think contributed to this success? She was asked this. Now listen to her response. She said, what was different this time? First of all, there was a broad ownership of the consultation across the country on government's reform program. Grenada's Committee of Social Partners and Homegrown Monitoring Committee, representing the trade unions, private company, the Council of Churches, non-government developmental agencies, were consulted regularly and involved in the monitoring performance. They provided feedback. They provided grassroots feedback to policymakers about how the program was affecting the people in the country. Now, couple that with what Prime Minister of Jamaica said in terms of their success in the IMF program. He attributed one of the things mainly to the 1,200. In other words, 1,200 200 consultations across Jamaica. We are having that consultation right here, right now on Brass That Sunday with the people of Barbados who may be going into an IMF program. And that is one of the things that can contribute to the success, because the things that both of you all are saying this morning actually speaks to this grassroots, non-governmental, developmental thinking minds. And I hope that the government of Barbados is listening. Continue.
I think that we want to go to a stage that the rules or whatever you might choose to call it in Parliament won't change in. Because you know that you have a job, you know you get paid, and you know nobody can fire you. So it's just going wrong, the word going wrong, and it come back up and you're still at square one. And far from at square one, when you does come now and you go out to talk to somebody else, oh, she's going to complain for you. Oh, she's get trouble. So you're still at square one. You're going wrong a little more, and you're going wrong a little more. So I think that if these people, if we start fighting the first two or three, we ain't going to get any further. We got the problem solved. Because then the rest can say, oh, you see, he has 6 or 7 years in here, and it just gone so down the drain for nothing. Until we start doing these things, nothing is going to happen. We are going to be always in the position that we are in. Because, oh, compared to me, as a police fella tell me, well, he and my mother, he and God, he can't tell me what to do. And upwards to know nothing has done about it. Who do you go to? When you go to these people, you are victimized.
All right, thank you.
You get nothing.
All right, thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Yes, go ahead, caller number one.
I agree with the caller in that respect, okay? And that is one of the things. If you do fire one or two of the people, remove one or two of those obstacles at the quote-unquote top, then a lot of things will shake up. Because then a lot of people will understand, listen, I have to work. But also, beyond that, they have to know what they are expected to do. They have to be also given those jobs and given the vision, okay? Now, I have said before, all roads right now lead to and through the Prime Minister. It starts at the very top, and accountability has to start with her. And when you have a situation, she has to now look at the system, at the whole system, and discuss with ministers or whatever the ways in which you can put different routes to get to different places. So therefore, people can go around the obstacle. If some person if something is sitting on somebody's desk for God knows how many years or how much of a length of time, there has to be an alternative route that somebody can go to and speak to that who's above that person, in order then to get them to do the job that they have to do, or else be removed and go home. We have to have somebody now who looks at that the public service and looks at the efficiencies in the public service and make sure that those efficiencies happen all the time, that departments are working. We have to have a place where the ombudsman is supposed to be a place where people can go and lodge complaints that are then investigated. We have to make sure that those things are working within the society. And there's so many complaints that people have and so many frustrations. And we need to have a government a prime minister and a government who understands those frustrations and is prepared to address them.